Buying or selling your home? Real Estate for Life can connect you with a pro-life real estate agent. When Real Estate for Life receives a referral fee, they donate 65% to Catholic Answers. Learn more at realestateforlife.org. Welcome back, Catholic Answers Live. I am Cy Kellett, your host. Thank you so much for taking the time to be with us. Tom Nash is our guest. Tom Nash, apologist here at Catholic Answers, author of very fine books and theologian who chose the path in his theology career of working for Catholic media. And you've worked for a bunch of Catholic media. EW10 you worked for, Ave Maria you worked for.
Catholics United for the Faith under Curtis Martin back in the day.
Oh, did you? Was that before Focus?
Focus actually got its start from Catholics United for the Faith, little known fact.
We're talking about mortal sins. Tom Nash is our guest. And look, the reason we're talking about mortal sins is, look, we're not trying to dwell on the sins. We get questions about this all the time, about what constitutes mortal sin. How will I know if I'm in a state of mortal sin? We get it, on the one hand, dismissively. Sometimes people are like, oh, you know, the Catholics with all your mortal sins. We didn't talk with Tom the first hour about the biblical roots of this understanding of sin that is deadly. But we can talk about that if we want this hour. But then we get from the other side as well, from people who are maybe overly worried or focused or maybe even terrified by the idea of mortal sin. We have clear warnings, and we have clear gifts, in other words, to heal when these things happen, when we fall, when we come up short, when we don't make it, when we and even when we do evil. You know, I don't want to just act like it. There are people, you know, who have been reconciled to God, who have, and this has happened all throughout history, who have done tremendous evil. I'll tell you right now. I'm going to just give you one of them, all right? And some people aren't going to like this, that this man was reconciled to God. But the commandant of Auschwitz, a concentration camp, a man who was a murderer, I don't know the words to describe how evil that is, became reconciled to God, made a confession, said he was sorry, and was executed as a member of the Catholic Church, as someone who had become reconciled to Christ. So
Rudolf,
I say that
Rudolf Hess. Or Huss.
Huss. I don't know how to, because people get him confused with the other Rudolf Hess. But yeah, and so I say that because look, the terror of these things is, I think, sometimes. An underestimation of what Jesus has already accomplished. You know, like, oh, in my case, he can't do it.
Stop it.
So, that's right. Stop it. You have to stop that when you have that sense.
God is working in your life.
God is working in your life, and he can do it. And so we went through direct sins against God, idolatry, blasphemy, missing mass, occult practices. We went through sins against others, murder, and unjust war or war crimes, gossip. Now, this is not everything, but these are the main things. Lying, gossip and lying about others, and then theft when it involves serious theft, when it involves theft, in other words, that can, you know, it doesn't have to be $1 trillion that you stole. It could be a loaf of bread, if that loaf of bread was going to feed a child who otherwise is going to die. Okay, that's mortally sinful. On the other hand, so it's not just the quantity, it's the consequence, in other words, that tells you about whether these are grave. So now we'll get into the ones everybody wants to know about. We'll talk about the sexual sins, and we will do so carefully, but also, if you have little ones, you might exercise some care and come back to us at another time, because we do have to talk quite clearly and openly about these. But let me start with this, Tom. People, I think in the modern world, we have been convinced that sexual sin just ain't no big deal. I mean, they're committing sexual sins on sitcoms every night on TV.
Yeah, it's ironic that that's the case, and yet we see in the last, we mentioned going back to our youth, and we can see the consequences of the normalizing of sin with the number of abortions, the increase in divorce, the increase of cohabitation in children born outside of wedlock, or born in they don't have they don't have a stable home that they grow up in. We see the degradation of our society, and then we've got the concomitant things of pornography and things like that with movies, and that just drags us all the way down. And there's can be that argument that you can implode from within as opposed to worrying about being taken over by the Russians, as there was that fear in decades past. So
You're describing something
Soviets,
that's
I should say.
Corrosive.
Yeah, it
sexual
is corrosive.
Sin is corrosive of our relationships.
Little by little
society.
By little. Yeah. And yet individual acts themselves can be gravely wrong. But if we look at marriage and what God created it to be, I think that's a good starting point to see why the other ones are all disorders from that.
All right, so how do we know that sexual sin is sin? Like, if I go to the Bible, like I hear all the time people be like, they don't mention this in the Bible. Like, it's not even mentioned in the Bible. Or so how do I know that sexual sin is sin?
Well, we know that it's mentioned in Exodus 20. We mention it. We also made reference to the Ten Commandments in our earlier discussions in Matthew chapter 19, where he's talking to the rich young man in verses 16 to 26, reiterating the commandments, and therefore in adultery. And it's not just adultery and covetousness, but the related sins that go into that. You know, that people say, well, Jesus never mentioned sodomy in particular. Well, that wasn't even on the table, because clearly it was adultery, and quite frankly, sodomy, and it wasn't just about people being promiscuous. It was as an intrinsic moral evil. It's very clear from Old Testament and New Testament, including Romans chapter 1, verses 18 to 32, that such is gravely wrong. Of course, there are heterosexual grave sins, and they are adultery and fornication and masturbation, also known as a solitary vice. But if we
also
go
sodomy.
No, exactly. I was saying heterosexual. Yeah, it could be sodomy within the heterosexual context, yes.
I say that because people are confused about that. They think
that is there are various expressions of grave wrongdoing, and sometimes people can rationalize young people saying, well, everything but fornication. But you can engage in things short of fornication that can be gravely wrong.
All right, let's start defining some terms then. What is it? The scripture clearly is against fornication. I think St. Paul most clearly, if I recall, in the New Testament. What is fornication and why is it sinful?
Yeah, well, God, we speak of the marital act, right? The two become one. And this is what the marital act, by its definition, by its name, is aptly described, because the two are to become one. It's the total giving of the husband and wife and being open to. Sometimes you hear the terms unitive and procreative. I prefer the love giving and the life giving. That the expression love, and in the expression of love, is ordered toward life, not necessarily, but open toward it. And if you thwart it through contraception, right, deliberately thwart it, then you are necessarily, to one extent or another, undermining that expression of love. Fornication is saying something with our body that we don't mean in our hearts. That is, I give to you myself. The fact of procreation is a possibility, right?
Yeah.
Is an indication that there should be a committed relationship between the people participating. And of course, with contraception, that just makes it all the more into a recreational thing. So fornication is sexual intimacy, sexual intercourse between two unmarried people, unlike the marital act, where there is
that's a grave sin.
That is gravely wrong. You are presuming to, again, it can be a form of idolatry too when people take it to try to rationalize it, because you're seeking this pleasure apart from God's created order. And when you do that, there are consequences not only for you, but for the people you are engaged with, as well as the people who may be procreated as a result of that. There's all reverberations.
Do you? So it seemed like you were accepting the kind of modern language about this. That look, you're saying something with your body. The language of the body is the language of total self-giving in sexual intercourse. I give myself completely to you.
Yeah.
Both, but you're not actually, if you're not married to the person, you're actually lying with your body. That's kind of how Pope John Paul talked about it.
Sure.
You accept that way of talking about fornication?
Yeah, I think it's a way that people can relate to. And it's not simply this is something, oh, I do with our bodies. No, we are bodily persons. We are body soul right. composites. And suddenly saying, oh, I didn't hit you. No, if you punch me in the face, you hit me, right?
Yeah.
Not that you in particular, but it's
no,
we
right.
can't act like our bodies are some
say,
appendages.
Say, I didn't mean it. So it doesn't count. I didn't mean it. So it doesn't, that's what we're saying
we
about
sex. We express ourselves, our personhood, our identities, our
yeah.
personalities through bodily expression, our choices, acts of the will that are expressed because we are bodily persons. And so this is, as you say, people can say, oh, this isn't a sin. Well, we can see the multiplier effect of all the social breakdown. And then, unfortunately, we have a lot of in the school systems who will try through sex education say, "Oh, this is okay, this is fine." And I yeah. like to say with Planned Parenthood, we won't have children, and we'll raise yours at your expense, literally, figuratively, truly.
Yeah, that's what has happened. A bit this sexual selfishness that we have engaged in does end up in a society that's not having babies.
Yeah, and what we've seen as well is an increase. So we've got adultery, which would be expands it because it's not just two unmarried people, but now you've got a husband and a wife. That's one that seems most people seem to get and to say, yeah, that's wrong. In a recent survey that came out, that is the one, because it hits close to home, isn't it? And not surprisingly. Hey, wait a second. We thought we were committed. What's wrong with a little recreation, right?
Yeah.
So that kind of nonsense. So yeah. So you got fornication. You've got adultery. You've got.
Well, I have to take a break. So I just wanted to get fornication in the definition down and be clear where we're starting. You start with a very positive thing that God has made this act for the total self giving to each other and for an openness to children, and so that positive, beautiful image. Is where we say, okay, but when we fall short of that in these acts that don't do those, that don't allow for that total self-giving and for children, then we've moved into the area of sin because we're misusing what God has given us. So fornication is the first of those. It's more serious than our society lets on. We got that we've got that. Now I want to get to the other sexual sins when we come back right after this.
Hello, this is Archbishop Alexander Sample of the Archdiocese of Portland in Oregon. Keep that dial right here on Catholic Answers Live.
Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Magnificat. Published monthly, Magnificat features texts of daily Mass, prayers, articles, meditations, art commentaries, and more, in step with the liturgical rhythm of the Church, on the web at Magnificat.com.
Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Real Estate for Life. Real Estate for Life connects homebuyers and sellers to real estate agents while supporting pro-life organizations. On the web at realestateforlife.org.
May is the month of Mary. How are you planning to honor the Blessed Mother? Whether it's planting a Mary garden in your yard, placing flowers by her image in your home, or adorning a statue of her with a handmade crown, there are many ways to express devotion to the Blessed Virgin Mary. EWTN invites you to celebrate along with us as we honor our Blessed Mother throughout her month with masses, devotions, TV, and radio specials.
Support for Catholic Answers Live comes from Catholic Chemistry, a dating app for Catholics. Founded by a longtime member of the Catholic Answers team, CatholicChemistry.com.
The world has a lot of questions about Catholicism. It's a big faith, and it deserves a big book of answers. Well, now it has two. Get the Big Book of Catholic Answers, Volume 2, and have 300 clear, reliable Catholic answers right at your fingertips whenever something comes up at work, with friends, or around the dinner table. Order your copy of the Big Book of Catholic Answers, Volume 2, at shop.catholic.com or ask for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Tom Nash, our guest. And we're taking the time to talk about an unpleasant subject in many ways, but I think it's a very important subject. And we do get incredible numbers of questions about, is this a mortal sin? Is that a mortal sin? Have I, committed a sin that God won't forgive? Or am I, all that stuff. Or why do you Catholics obsess about these things? So worth going through. One of the reasons we obsess, as people might say, about sexual sins is because of the goodness of what God has given us in the relationship between men and women. It's not because of those relations are bad. It's because of the exalted goodness of them. As a matter of fact, God uses the image of marital relations as the image of his own love for us, for the human race, for his church. We're not adding on to the Bible. We're not exaggerating, things that were minor in the Bible. We're taking the great theme of the Bible and applying it. That's what we're doing when we're taking sexual sin seriously, is we're taking the overarching theme of the Bible. In the beginning, it was man and woman, he created them, and then the whole thing ends in a wedding feast at the end. So this is the theme of the Bible. This is not a preoccupation outside of what God really cared about. What God really cared about is us, and this is central to our lives. So that's why we got into the conversation about what is fornication and why is it sinful. Let's go over some others, Tom. It's all adultery, I think, is easy to say it's a sin because God just said it's a sin. He said, thou shalt not commit adultery.
Yes, and going to your point about the Bible, these are sins that are, through the natural moral law, we all recognize. There was Margaret Mead, the 20th century sociologist who went to Samoa and reported how they were, quote unquote, sexually free with fornication or adultery, whatnot. And yet it was all fabricated thing, which was kind of a rationalization on her part.
Science that was fabricated?
Can't believe it. Justify her own, sadly, lesbian lifestyle. But these are things that you look... The natural moral law and the family, even if you've got polygamy, these are recognized, which shows the law of God written on our heart. These go across cultures.
I can give you some evidence of that. They just did a recent survey, and I'm going to forget but people can look it up, about what there was actually a lot of reporting on it, so you can find this. What do Americans disapprove of all, whether you're religious or not religious, the number one thing that Americans disapprove of morally, by far, adultery.
Yeah, that's
everybody
the one
knows
I was making
wrong.
Reference to that.
Everybody
I
knows it's wrong.
We saw the same survey.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yep, because it hits close to home, exactly.
Yeah, because you know that it involves deception, lying,
selfishness.
Like you just see, that's not fair to have
it's,
someone
it's
make a vow to you.
Contrary to a commitment, yes.
Yeah, right.
And selfishness is great until it hits home.
Yeah, and adultery hits home. So everybody knows adultery is wrong. That hasn't diminished its popularity. But there we go.
Yeah.
So is pornography adultery? You know, for say a married man who
well, our Lord, going back to Scripture, what did he say? If you look upon a woman with lust, you have committed adultery or fornication, for that matter, in your heart. And certainly that can happen with pornography, especially with deliberately exposing, no pun intended, yourself to that. And pornography, I love how the Catechism sums it up, Si. Pornography consists in removing real or simulated sexual acts from the intimacy of the partners in order to display them deliberately to third parties. It offends against chastity because it perverts the conjugal act, the intimate giving of spouses to each other. It does grave injury to the dignity of its participants, actors, vendors, like for sale, the public, since each one becomes an object of base pleasure and illicit profit for others, it immerses all who are involved in the illusion of a fantasy world. It is a grave offense. Civil authorities should prevent the production and distribution of pornographic materials. I agree.
I agree with all of that.
I would revise our obscenity laws in that light, but that's another discussion.
Courts have been foolish in the United States. I don't know how it is around the world, but in the United States, we treat this as a First Amendment issue as if dirty pictures was what the founders of the Constitution
meant. Yeah, there's a difference between nudes that are, statues versus, photographs of real people, and even more so, movies.
Okay, so what we don't say, at least often you don't hear people say people look at pornography. They say people use pornography, and that gives you an insight into what it is. It's a thing that's designed to stimulate a pleasure response in us.
Yeah.
We're not reading pornography like you read a book. You're using pornography to create a biological effect in yourself.
Yeah, and in the process, we've seen, because of human trafficking, which has become much worse, that we've gotten people that have been procured into doing these movies against their will. So it extends the related thing of rape. Just gravely, gravely wrong. What's been going on, how pornography has become a scourge on our country, and now much more easily available because of the anonymity, the accessibility, and affordability.
It's so shocking when you think about what children are exposed to on the internet.
I fear that many people, because I've, you know, priests have spoken about it generally, that this is an oftentimes men's conferences, shall we say, not an infrequent sin that's confessed. And there is a tremendous rationalization that men will apply. Well, I'm not committing adultery. I'm not committing fornication. Well,
but that's not what Jesus said.
No, it's not. And clearly you are enslaving yourself. Vice breeds vice. Virtue is virtue. Chastity is a virtue where you have self-control and you can respect the person. This is where we are reminded that we are to give a witness so that women, you know, will have role models and expect more from the people they date, the people they marry, et cetera, et cetera.
Right. Okay, so pornography is related to... I don't use the term self-abuse because I, as a child, when priests would talk and said self-abuse, you know, like they would say,
yeah,
they would, when the priest was leading you through, here's how you do an examination of conscience. I honestly didn't know what he was talking about.
It's a truism, but it needs
like
an explanation.
Sometimes you just need to say. So let's use the term solitary
vice,
sexual sin.
Yeah. Okay. Solitary vice.
Why is that sinful? What's wrong?
We mentioned about that we are created to give a gift of ourselves. And that we who are bodily beings, that we are to, you know, the love-giving and life-giving expressions of the marital act, we are to be outward. Love is outward, not, you know, turning inward. Yes, we love ourselves. But masturbation is turning inward and to misuse the sexual act, to misuse the gift of sexuality in a way that... you know, idolizes ourselves to one extent or another, that really turns us inward and not, instead of outward in terms of the gift.
Yeah.
That we are definitely, you know, it is a form of lust. It's often associated with pornography or impure thoughts, right? Because, you know, the whole thing of fantasy, misguided meditation, if you will. And so when we are turned inward in the process... you know, we are, it's, you know, you were using, as it says in the catechism, the sexual faculty for whatever reason outside of marriage is essentially contrary to its purpose. We can see that you mentioned fornication, but all the more so, not all the more so because it's solitary, but it's still gravely wrong and it's going to affect us and how we interact with people. And we see this, how people, I've seen people who've got married and, oh, so-and-so didn't realize so-and-so had a pornography masturbation problem that had to be worked through.
However, I got to be careful how I speak about this, but the youth, for example, or psychological disturbance I think even it says habit. I'm trying to remember what it says in
there.
But so we have to be careful not to leave people without hope on
this
one.
No, it says here, to form an equitable judgment about the subject. This is 2352 of the Catechism. To form an equitable judgment about the subject's moral responsibility guide, pastoral action, one must take into account the affective immaturity, force of acquired habit, conditions of anxiety, or other psychological and social factors that can lessen, if not even reduce to a minimum, moral culpability. At the same time, if someone engages, I think it's good as a part of practice, if one engages in the sin of masturbation, to go to confession before one receives communion. Now, if you talk, I think that encourages the person all the more so to grow in chastity, erring on the side of caution. And it as well, you know, people say, hey, why did so-and-so not go to communion today? Well, that's where we need to avoid the sin of gossip and to not be looking at the communion line as an evaluation of where everyone is at with God and how we're doing versus them kind of garbage.
So here, this is one where the world thinks we are absolutely insane. And I think that that's not bad. We are not made for the world. We're made for God.
Yeah, and in the process.
This is a sin that can be overcome even when people are in a grave, a persistent habit. And freedom from this, as so many people are testifying now in their, you know, talking on Matt Frad's podcast or whatever.
Yes.
Freedom from this really is a spiritual freedom, and I think people should have hope.
We were made for more, we were made for better, and these things, we become enslaved in vice instead of free.
More Sins with Tom Nash right after this on Catholic Answers Live.
Have you ever wondered about the mysterious, even obscure aspects of the Catholic faith? Dive into the Jimmy Akin podcast, where Jimmy brings together information from many fields as he pushes the boundaries of apologetics. Tune in today to the Jimmy Akin Podcast, Mysteries of the Faith, a highly entertaining, informative, and at times humorous show that will help you grow in your faith. Visit JimmyAkinPodcast.com today to subscribe.
Lots of people have big questions about Catholicism. It needs a big book of answers, and now it's got one. The Big Book of Catholic Answers is filled with helpful replies to more than 250 questions about the faith. Questions about God, salvation history, the Creed, the Bible, the list goes on and on. Order your copy of the Big Book of Catholic Answers today at shop.catholic.com or ask for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
We hope that one of the things that we communicate here at Catholic Answers Live is that our Catholic faith allows us to be fully serious about all the problems we encounter in the church and in the world, but it also lets us have light hearts and maybe even mix in a bit of fun, and that is exactly what our good friend Joe Heschmeyer does in his popular podcast, Shameless Popery. You should check it out at shamelessjoe.com. Joe's got a deep grasp of the faith, of morals, the teachings of the church, all that. But he's also got a witty conversational style. He entertains and he informs. But you will leave equipped to better answer the most common challenges, misconceptions, and questions about the Catholic faith. He's got insightful guests. He does on-air debates. And he takes a close look into all the things that you want to know about as a Catholic living today. You'll walk away knowledgeable and filled with joy. Look for Joe on his YouTube channel. Check him out at shamelessjoe.com or wherever you get your podcasts. And if you like what you hear, become a patron. Welcome back. Catholic Answers Live. We're talking about mortal sins. Because we need to have these conversations every now and then. We get a lot of questions about these, and sometimes we get accusations about these. Why is the church so obsessed with this or that? We talked about sins against God, idolatry, blasphemy, missing mass, occult practices. This is not a comprehensive list. This is a major a list of major ones to consider. Sins against others, murder and war crimes and gossip and lying that does serious harm, and theft also that does serious harm. All of these can... If we do them with the consent of the will and full knowledge, be mortal sins. These can be condemnatory of us. We have to avoid these, and we need to confess them and overcome them when they are part of our lives and we have done them. Saying that in the spirit of condemnation, but in the spirit of always remembering, we need to keep turning back to God's mercy on these things. And no one yet has exhausted God's mercy. It hasn't happened yet. I know you probably think you tried, but no one's done it yet. So it'd be like saying somebody's, used up the whole ocean or something. But then we got into sexual sins. We talked about fornication, adultery, pornography, masturbation, human trafficking. I want to ask you about two more sexual sins that I think these are the ones that really, really make us Catholics unpopular. The fact that we list these among not just sexual sins, but among the grave sexual sins. And you can take them in whichever order you want, but this is going to be the low point of the show for our popularity, because people don't like us because we say homosexual acts are gravely sinful and contraception is gravely sinful. Take it in whatever order you want.
Yeah, well, homosexual acts, sodomy, and in particular when we see the expression between two men, we could see the absence of complementarity, whereas the marital act, you know, an openness to life, even with people who are sterile or are in their later years, you see the complementarity between husband and wife. There are natural processes, which we don't need to detail, that if a woman who's a healthy woman, there are processes that welcome facilitate the marital act. Whereas with regard to sodomy, quite frankly, it's injurious to a person's backside. And it is clearly, there is no giving and receiving. There is no complementarity. There is no love-giving and life-giving aspects to it. And we talked off-air about Gore Vidal, the famous writer, openly homosexual, who said that he had found, and what an admission and acknowledgement on his part, that with his longtime partner, a key part of their staying together was not engaging in sodomy, and that engaging in sodomy was a deterrent to communion and relationship with people, yes. And I thought, wow, what does that say? I mean, people say, well, look at Mary and Joseph. They didn't have, yeah, but this was a Josephite marriage. They were totally giving and they were not, whereas, and they didn't seek things, God forbid, blasphemy on the side, whereas these homosexual couples are frequently doing that. And it just says something that when you try to romanticize it, right? It doesn't mean that two men can't be very good friends and brothers, hopefully brothers in Christ. But when you try to add a romantic component to it, we clearly see and that sodomy itself as an action, it is an invalid expression of love. There's no two way about it. To whatever people might think, it is a perversion, it is unnatural, it is contrary to the moral order, and this is not to get on. And this is to talk about the people.
Relationships.
No, it doesn't facilitate. And Gore Vidal said it. I spoke to somebody recently, same situation, that they had been with somebody 45 years. They got permission to pursue things on the side, but they had never engaged. I said, what does that tell you about that? You and your friend have been together 45 years, but you've never engaged in sodomy. Doesn't that tell you that sodomy is not a unitive
It doesn't act. Bring people together.
It doesn't bring people together. It breaks them apart. So there we have those examples. Contraception, in some ways, contraception opens the door to homosexuality. Why? Because it talks about recreation. And if it's just about recreation or expression or pleasure, right, because we've totally thwarted openness to the procreative aspect, then, hey, that opens the door to other forms of sexual pleasure. And I might choose to do it this other way. Now, I do believe that contraception, as one priest I remember celebrating back in 1988, Jeffrey Rodagero, it was Ukrainian Rite priest, and he talked about, and I do believe this is true, that I think it's more self-evidently wrong that pornography is wrong versus contraception. People don't get that, hey, we're married, what's wrong? But you fail to see, I've talked to many women who are married, and when with contraception, you oftentimes see that, oh, wait a minute, contraception, you got to be on call because, yeah.
Oh, that it turns the married relationship, even though you might have a married relationship with children, when you're contracepting.
It objectifies the wife, you're on call, it's not appreciating her in her totality or femininity.
It's also often using chemicals that
not good for the body.
It seems like a
Janet Smith has done a great job. Dr. Janet Smith, God bless her, retired of Sacred Heart Seminary in Detroit, has done a great job of pointing out all the side effects, and they are long and they are not good for you, weight gain, et cetera, depression, these things. They are side effects to this treating what isn't a medical problem, that is fertility. So yeah, contraception, even if people might not self-evidently see it, it's still wrong and it causes problems. And of course, contraception, whether in marriage or outside of marriage, not good for, and it facilitates, was the fuel, the gas on the gasoline on the fire of the sexual revolution.
And the sexual revolution, if you look at it objectively, as far as the happiness of women, the happiness of men, the health of children.
Yeah.
It has been a disaster.
Yeah.
And people, we lie to ourselves about that. We say it's been a great liberation. No, it has not. It has been a cultural, civilization-wide disaster. All right. We've covered then the major sexual sins, fornication, excuse me, adultery, pornography, masturbation, human trafficking, which involves other sins as well, homosexual acts, and contraception. Let's get into the heart of people, mm-hmm. because I'll tell you what, Tom, I think a lot of us are envious or hateful, and we don't even really quite realize that we are.
Yeah.
You know, that I think our own hearts are hidden from us in some ways.
And in some ways, too, we talk about covetousness, because that is a dovetail continuation showing how internally, you know, with lust, that coveting one's wife, coveting somebody else, committing adultery in your heart, these are things that what we do disfigure us, and they affect how we live and how we interact with people.
Well, let me push back on that a little bit, because okay. I'm remembering, as you're saying that, I'm thinking of Dennis Prager's debate with Matt Frad,
yes,
about pornography. And Prager's point was, what does it matter what's going on in my heart? What matters is how I treat other people and whether I give God what I'm supposed to give God. What does it matter whether in this case, it was basically having impure thoughts or looking at pornography. What about the, because I think a lot of people might look at it this way,
will inevitably objectify.
I never act on my hatred. I never act on my hatred of a certain kind of people I really hate those people. But why is that sinful?
Let's go back to Dennis Prager's specific example. And I would say, Dennis, whether you or for other people, it affects particularly the women that are in your life one way or another. You objectify them, the women you date, the women you don't date, the wife you have. Inevitably, pornography, as Matt Frad argued so well, and we've said otherwise in our discussion in complementarity and in confirmation of that, it objectifies the individual who is lusting. It also objectifies the recipient. There's no doubt about that. Our interior life shapes who we are in our outward expression. And that can be with hatred, like you mentioned, hatred or other things like that. If we hate somebody, it's bad for our health. As the old saying goes, drinking poison and hoping the other person dies. That these vices are bad for our health.
But I can't control my emotions. That's the other side thing people are going to say.
True.
It's
one thing, but how do we deal with our anger? Do we respond to it with meekness, or do we lash out? Do we hold a grudge? Do we ruminate? Do we meditate and nourish that grudge?
Yes, all of those things. I'm sorry to say, Tom.
Well,
I'm finding myself answering yes to all of those.
We have to catch ourselves.
Yeah, right.
And otherwise, like, there could be other things, like if we don't, we might think, hey, I'm, you know, like the rich fool, the parable of the rich fool in the Gospel of Luke, where we think I can go my own way, and God is, but of course, as the Lord says, you fool, your life will be required of you this night. What then will you do of all these grain bins, et cetera, that you've accumulated? So that we could be presumption. It can lead to the sentence against hope, presumption. You mentioned about God, you can't exhaust God's mercy. No, we can't, but we can definitively self-exclude ourselves, which is what hell is. And of course, we want to let people know that as long as they have breath, there is God's mercy. And so to always turn back, and not to commit the sin of presumption against hope, or commit the sin against despair.
Well, let's go through some of the sins of the heart by name. Mm-hmm. But okay. I do think I have to take a break, Tom.
Okay.
So we'll go through them after we do the break. But I think you said a word that is at the root of a lot of people's problem with mortal sin, and that word is hell. Mm. That I don't know. Again, we talked about homosexuality and contraception. If you start talking about hell, we are going to be the most unpopular people on earth. Boy, talk about an unpopular idea. So when we're talking about mortal sin, I think the reason people don't like it is we're talking about a spiritual death, that if you persist in that spiritual death until your own physical death, you will not see the face of God. You will be eternally excluded from the household of God. Nobody likes that, Tom. So I'm going to make you justify that and go through the sins of the heart that can keep me out of heaven right after this on Catholic Answers Live.
There's only one. Catholic Answers Live.
The Catechism defines evangelization as the proclamation of Christ and his gospel by word and the testimony of life. But what does that look like in real life? It looks like St. Paul street evangelists out in the public square sharing the good news. We're a Catholic nonprofit that starts conversations by handing out free sacramentals. Then we employ our method of listen, befriend, proclaim, and invite. Catholic Answers is supported in part by St. Paul Street Evangelization. Visit streetevangelization.com to learn more.
Alexian Brothers is a proud sponsor of Catholic Answers Live. For 800 years, these Catholic brothers have offered a prophetic and daring response to the gospel. Serving Christ in the sick, the poor, and the dying. Is God calling you to be a courageous disciple? If you feel called to total self-giving as a religious brother in the mission of Jesus, call our vocations office at 847-264-8703. That's 847-264-8703. AlexianBrothers.org.
EWTN, communicating the faith.
I'm a truck driver and I listen to it all night long. It's transformed my life. It's the greatest thing ever happened to me, next to knowing Jesus Christ, Mother Angelica, all the programming. It's a wonderful, beautiful thing, and I can't thank you enough. And God bless Mother Angelica. What a force of nature that wonderful woman was.
EWTN, live truth, live Catholic.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Tom Nash, our guest. Thanks for being here for two whole hours, Tom.
Good to be here, man.
It's probably time off purgatory for you. Does it work that way? Like, if you have to suffer through an insufferable host for 2 hours, do you get some time off purgatory?
I'd like to think it's by doing a good deed in collaboration with you.
Oh, okay.
You always turn
everything positive, Tom.
It's good habit.
Except when you just, in the middle of conversation, shout out things like, we're all going to die, and I don't know why you said it.
That was off air. And
let's not get into it. I want to get into
it. It goes with, you know, that we all have to have an accountant.
So justify hell to me real quickly. I know we've done it a million times, and it is something people call and ask for. Like, how can a loving God send people to hell? I think if you reword the question to be, how can a loving God tolerating people refusing him, then it becomes a little easier to understand.
Yes.
But when we're talking about mortal sin, we are talking about sin that can get you into hell.
Yes, if not repented of. And again, mercy, sure. God's mercy, and let's not put ourselves beyond God's mercy, good people out there in the listening audience, that God is always there. But yeah, these things exclude us because they are gravely wrong. We have, to one way or another, put something, they are expressions of idolatry, where we put my will be done over thy will be done. And as the Catechism says so well in 1033, to die a mortal sin without repenting and accepting God's merciful love means remaining separated from him forever by our own free choice. This state of definitive self-exclusion from communion with God and the blessed is called hell.
Yeah.
And people don't want to hear it, but it's in the end, people want a third choice, okay? I don't want hell.
That's right.
But we don't want heaven because then... And so do we have trust in God? It's like, well, these are the choices. And are we going to become childlike, Matthew 18, verses 1 to 4, or are we going to do it our way and say, if this is heaven, to hell with it? It's not a good call.
No.
And so it's our choice, and there is no happiness in hell. And yet they're not longing for heaven because they made their choice. The will has been fixed. We have, this is our choice to make. And God gives us the opportunity many, many times in his mercy to turn to him. And Because heaven would be, itself would be a hell to people, right? Because this means repenting. This means
or letting go of the thing. Refuse to let go of it.
You have refused to detach that which you've made an idol, and so God's presence in heaven becomes hell to you, sadly. And oftentimes people talk, well, what is hell? It's like, well, it's like inevitably you're not in communion with God. And because you have seen God as such an adversary, that you, this is true hell because you have rejected that which is your fulfillment.
Yeah.
And so, you know, the suffering is, people talk about, could that be God's, the burning love of God, and yet they hate it. You know, people, as one description of hell. But the bottom line is, what is hell? It's the definitive self-exclusion of man, self-exclusion from communion with God and the blessed.
Okay, so when we're talking about sins of the heart then, interior sins that, yes, that I have within me, not acts that I'm outwardly committing, but acts of the will and of the intellect. So let's say, let me give you a scenario. Somebody has been badly hurt by another person. Okay?
Yes.
Think of some horrible, evil act was committed against them.
Yep.
And the person says, I can't forgive it. So what does that person need to do to get into heaven? Do they have to let go of all their anger?
Well, our Lord says, you know, if you have not forgiven men's sins, neither will my Father in heaven forgive yours. We see this in Matthew 6.
But that's what I'm asking. What does it mean to forgive in that?
Well, it means it's to let go of the pain. It's also to let go of the power you have given them over your life. It's to recognize that God is merciful, that this is not going to define who you are. It's a freeing forgiveness.
Do I have to go to Thanksgiving dinner with them?
No, it does not mean you need to have a relationship with them. It does not mean that you need to be friends with them, etc. But it does mean that you need to forgive them and, you know, ultimately to wish them well, which is heaven. Now, it might involve a severe mercy, quite frankly, which would involve prison for somebody who's done something gravely wrong. Or something else. So it doesn't mean someone is off the hook. It doesn't excuse their wrongdoing and saying, oh, no big deal. It recognizes that was, but that's why you are forgiving them, precisely because you recognize they've done something.
What if I said to God, look, God, I'm emotionally stuck on this, but just because I know it's what you want,
I need to be healed.
I pray for that person to go to heaven.
We can't be in heaven if we are not in union with God and all those. And this is why we are detached from not only our idolatrous attachments, but detached from nursing grudges, nursing hurts, nursing resentments.
What about envy? Why is envy a grave sin? A hatred, an unwillingness to forgive. I can see that as a kind of violence against the other person, which I'm really committing against myself, but it's a disposition of violence towards the other person. Why is envy? Like, I wish I had everything Elon Musk has. He's got so much stuff. I don't even have one private jet.
Well,
and he's got a bunch of private jets. I don't have any.
That could be
zero.
That could be covetousness.
No private jet. Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, but jealousy is distinguished from...
On
yes. Jealousy is distinguished from envy, and going back to 6 degrees... From Pope Leo XIV, we're going to quote Augustine. But before we quote the great St. Augustine, envy is a capital sin, Catechism 2539. It refers to the sadness at the sight of another's goods. And so it's not just saying, oh, wow, I wish I had what Elon Musk has.
Okay. It's okay to kind of wish,
immoderate desire to acquire for them for oneself, even unjustly, when it wishes grave harm to a neighbor, it is a mortal sin. And this is the beautiful thing where St. Augustine says, St. Augustine saw envy as the diabolical sin. From envy are born hatred, detraction, calumny. We're hitting on things we've talked about earlier. Joy caused by the misfortunes of a neighbor, Schadenfreude.
Yeah.
Good German word. And displeasure caused by his prosperity. In other words, we don't rejoice like the person who, when they found their lost coin in, I think it's Luke 15, we are saddened at their prosperity. And gratitude is crucial in this matter, and also, you know, true charity and rejoicing in what other people have, and the gifts that they have, and not being envious. Envy is a killer in various ways, as we just documented.
That thing that Augustine said about envy being at the root of all of these things is, it sounds like René Girard to me, that his whole thing about we desire and we imitate other people's desires, and then we start to envy, and then we start to be violent towards those who we see as the problem of us not getting what we wanted.
If we're emulating people's desires and acting like them, and we're getting them, clearly what they're doing is not good for us, versus if we're emulating the saints, it's going to lead to true freedom. And this, think about this, internal dispositions, poverty, chastity, and obedience. What a response to the world, where we think about poverty, riches, obedience versus power, and chastity with sex. These are like the big three of you're rejecting those and you still got happiness?
Yeah.
What gives? Well, there's a God whose image and likeness, that interior life, and this talks about the sins of the heart. If we get that right, that interior life, it's going to transform us. And easier said than done, but that's where we have to draw near to the Lord and be little children.
Because he himself is meek and humble of heart.
Yes, childlike,
not
childish.
When you know that he's not asking something of us that
and
is not true.
And think about his example about he could have called down legions of angels to destroy himself, and yet he didn't. He didn't say, hey, Father, forgive them, except for those Pharisees, doggone it. I'm really upset at Caiaphas, thought he, you know.
Yeah, that's
for the sake of the state. That Jesus models meekness. He models forgiveness. And so it is fitting. His death is fitting in terms of how he died, to show the ugliness of sin and also that God's mercy triumphs over sin.
You talked about presumption of God's mercy as one of the dispositions of the heart that's a problem. Hatred, covetousness, envy, presumption of God's mercy. But you have on the list despair of God's mercy.
Yeah.
Why is it a grave sin to despair of God's mercy?
Well, I like to say that despair is the flip side of pride. That when we think we're beyond God's forgiveness, we can't be forgiven. We've done something too much, and that we believe that God is somehow against us, or that God can't forgive us, or that life is not worth living. God, again, people, suicide is gravely wrong. Objectively, we don't presume to judge in any particular case,
right, yes.
But we commend people's souls to God's mercy, and yet we also want to encourage people that there is hope, that there is...
Well, sometimes there's a kind of bravado of despair, of like, I'm going to hell anyways, you know, like that. That's a kind of presumption of.
Yeah. If someone's, but that's in some sense saying like, I don't want anything to do with you, God. If that means being childlike.
Oh, I see. Yeah. Right. Right.
And then thank you. No, thank you. And it's like, again, it's like, if that is heaven, to hell with it. As I say in one of our Q&As, it's a terrible thought, but this is what the devil and his minions said originally. If this is heaven, to hell with it. And this is where pride is the worst of all sins, and how if we become childlike, easier said than done, especially as we become adults and have responsibilities of various sorts, becoming childlike versus childish is the key to the life of Christ.
What do you do if you've committed a mortal sin or you are in the habit of a mortal sin? You've got 20 seconds.
Well, you need to repent, get to confession as soon as possible, repent to the Lord, say, Lord, forgive me, I have failed. And realize that God, who is bound by the sacraments, is not himself, who bound salvation to the sacraments, is not himself bound by the sacraments. So we never give up hope for any person. And therefore, to seek God's mercy, preferably in confession, but keep praying for them otherwise.
If people think that this is like a modern innovation of the church has always taught that even at the moment of death, if someone cries out to God for mercy, God will have mercy on them.
St. Faustina, the great one, he says, God beckons to each person three times at death. We don't want to be presuming on God's mercy, but we don't want to also despair of it.
Tom Nash has been our guest. That will do it for us. We didn't list every possible mortal sin, but we got the big ones. Thanks for being with us. We'll see you next time, God willing, right here on Catholic Answers Live.